Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Well, this sucks.
Yeah, I'm not a prairie person. There's some cool stuff out there, but I'm
some
definitely
sweet ass mule deer, tell you that much.
Yeah, I don't stop for many animals, you know, growing up around BC and that with the size of animals that we have. And there's definitely a few deer out there that even whitetail that stopped me in my tracks on the road. Never seen anything that big in my life when it came to deer.
Yeah, just man, they're insane out there.
Yeah, it's like miniature elk.
Yeah, my uncle lives out there and he sends me pictures all the time just to tease me. Fucking guy.
What part of Saskatchewan?
He lives in Rosetown.
Rosetown, I know the name of that place. Yeah. I was down in southeast Saskatchewan. It was called Radville. It's just, I don't know, 50K southeast of, southwest of Weyburn.
Yeah.
Right in the rolling hills there. Man, that was something else.
Yeah. Yeah, they got crazy muleys there. Alberta's got good muleys too. But I don't know, I got buddies there and my brother lives in Alberta. And they send me pictures all the time.
Just to rub it in.
Big freaking muleys. Yeah, man.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm a little bit envious of some of them. We used to have nice ones around here in the valley, but I don't know. Populations have really, really gotten hammered the last 10 years here.
Of muleys?
Yeah, just bad management. And we used to have tons. And whitetail too. Like,
no whitetail either? Do you guys have a doe season there for whitetail?
Unfortunately, we do. And I'm the type of person where if you need the meat and it's legal, go for it. Fill your freezer, feed your family. I've taken a few does in the past when our populations were really high. And, but it was two does a person. And up here in the Kootenays, we get a lot of, and I'm not, it's locals and people from out of town, but we get a lot of people coming from out of the area for what used to be good elk hunting. And we all know elk hunting's tough. So if you don't get anything, well, you're pretty much guaranteed to get your two does.
Yeah.
So you'd be driving down the roads and seeing the camps and there'd be no word of a lie, you know, 8 to 12 different does hanging in every single camp. And populations just can't handle that. So I mean, they just switched it last year to one doe, which is an improvement. But we're all at zero.
Yeah, we have one doe here.
Oh, okay. What are your populations like?
Oh, man, I don't know. Like, from the amount of time I've hunted here since I've moved here, there's more. It seems like there's more whitetails than there used to be.
Okay.
But I'm also seeing whitetails in areas where it used to just be inhabited by tons of muleys and there's no muleys there anymore. So I don't know. I don't know if the mule deer are just being displaced by the whitetail and maybe, but I don't know. Like I said, I've seen more whitetail this year than I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah. Since I moved down here and started hunting down here. But I mean, like, up in Prince Rupert, we didn't have any whitetails. So
no, and you know, as a kid, I never really paid much. I wasn't into hunting back then. I was into fishing when we were up there in Rupert. And all I remember were the giant moose on the Skeena River.
Yeah, moose and the black bears, a few like grizzly bears too, but just the size of the black bears.
Yeah, there's something else.
Fucking huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. But so I don't know. I mean, like obviously the guys I talked to have been here a lot longer than me, and they've hunted way more area than I have. They say that that there's way less whitetails and the quality of whitetails
okay
has gone down, but I don't know, man. And then I talk to the same guys and I show them pictures of some mule or some whitetails I have on my trail cameras and stuff. And a couple that I've got in the past few years, and they're kind of blown away that I got those deer in region 8. So
I guess the thing is, you know, how far are you? I know you're a hiker. You like to walk in and kind of get off the beaten track.
Yeah, I got to get far away. The further away, the better, I find.
Yeah. I around here, it's kind of the same way. It's high pressure area, lots of hunters, lots of logging. So there's lots of access roads all the way to the tops of every mountain. Easy to get to places, which also makes it easier for predators too. But yeah, I find getting parking and trying to walk into the ugly areas. So I don't know. I like to hunt in a lot of front country stuff too, where people, they don't go, they just assume there's nothing there.
Yeah.
They don't want to go for the walk or whatever. And it's right in front of everybody. I don't know how many times I've had people walking by and I'm just kind of set up. I won't say a word. I'll just keep quiet. And I mean, they are booking it, like walking so fast and not cautiously. And I just sit back and I don't even bother getting out of there. I mean, they're probably going to spook something toward me.
Yeah. I kind of do the same thing. If I'm going to an area, I kind of just put my head down and go. Obviously it's like the way I look at it is the more time the faster you get there, the more time you have when you're there. But also if you're got your head down and you're hunkering along, there's a better chance of spooking something along the way.
Yeah.
No, it all depends, I think, mostly what I'm hunting for too. If I'm hunting like whitetail, I'm pretty cautious when I'm walking through the bush.
Only because I bumped one of the coolest looking deer I've had on my trail cameras up there. He had 7 on one side, and on the other side, he had this big fork, just a super cool looking deer.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, this thing was insane. I don't know. I'll send you a picture of this thing. I had him on my trail cameras, and I went in there to check the trail cameras. He was only on my trail cameras ever at night, and I went in there early, and it was a little bit dark, and I walked in there, and I heard some crashing, and you know, there was a deer there blowing at me, and when I got to check my trail cameras, that same deer had been there right at daylight the last two mornings, so pretty sure I bumped him in the dark.
Oh man.
Which is kind of why I stopped going into my stands in the dark now. I go in there when I can see.
Yeah, and that's actually how I got my whitetail this year. Is I kept getting bumped in the, you know, it's walking light but not quite shooting light. Yeah. And you can't see, you know, into the tree lines, or if you're walking in the thick bush. Yeah, I got bumped by, oh man, I don't know how many, just does. Not that there was a pile of them, but you know, when you're in mid rut, I don't even look for the bucks. I'm just trying to find the does and figure the boys will come around to party later on.
Yeah.
And but same thing, I'd wait till shooting light for this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'll leave when it's dark, or leave, you know what I mean? I'll leave. Yeah. You got to time it pretty good. Or I mean, I've even sat in, I've sat there and waited either at camp or in my vehicle before I head into the trailhead or get into the areas where I know I'm going to be, where it gets close to hunting. Just for that one reason, man. Never seen that. That was last year that happened.
Well, okay.
And like 2 years ago, two falls ago, I never seen that deer after that ever. And I've hunted that one area for a long time. I got trail cameras all around there. The rest of that year, never seen them. All this year, like all this past fall, never seen them. So, and it's not like, I mean, maybe he's dead, but there's a very slim chance that another hunter got him, but you never know.
Yeah. And sometimes they seem to just skirt your cameras too.
Yeah. I think I think that was him that I heard when I was walking in, and he was gonzo.
Man, I find it almost comical too, because I'm the type of person that walks with a headlamp too in elk season, just to try to get off the road and in deep.
Yeah.
And then I'll sit and wait in an area and then I'll go from there. And last year, I don't know how many times I walked into an area and I knew the timing of it. I knew kind of when the elk were coming through. Not exactly, they changed their patterns all the time, but they knew I had to get from point A to point B at a certain time, because irregardless what way they came from, they usually crossed in this area.
Yeah.
I bet you 8 out of 10 times I actually got, my hunt was blown by a whitetail when I'm hunting mule deer whitetail, and they'd go off and I'd just be sitting there like, are you kidding me? Like I'm 30 yards away from where I want to sit.
Yeah.
And then come whitetail season this year, it is the exact opposite. And go in and in our valley here, a lot of the herds make their way down to the wetlands.
Yeah.
Just to get out of the deep snow and everything. And I run into more elk than I do deer. And it's the elk that are blowing my hunts when I'm trying to hunt whitetail. You just sit there and be like, you guys got something going on here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're in cahoots for sure.
Oh,
they got it all figured out, man. Yeah, that's funny. That's what makes it interesting, though.
Oh, yeah. I love it. Those are the memories. My brother actually came down from, he's never hunted any big game. He's on the Charlottes there.
Oh, yeah. Elk on the Charlottes.
Yeah, he said that he's going to try this year. They're only in one spot there, and he's never done that. So he's only hunted the Sitka deer there.
Yeah. If you call them deer, I mean,
I call them dog deer myself. I always have. So I don't know. They're so small. I don't even know what I'd use to shoot them.
Yeah, they're tiny. I mean, we've hunted them over there. Yeah, they're small for sure.
Oh.
We used to go, when I used to fish, we used to go hunt them. You know, when we have like weather days and storms would roll in, we'd be stuck in Charlotte City or up in Masset. And so then we'd take a truck and we'd go hunting. But
yeah,
they're small, just for sure.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, you could just
they were anyway.
Yeah, you could. I think they still are. I don't know. They're pretty tiny though.
Yeah. Yeah. I invited him down this fall and I said, told him to come down beginning of November. And I was like, we're right in the middle of the mule deer rut, beginning of the whitetail. I was like, we'll see something. And man, first day, didn't see anything. Tried going out for a spike fork moose. Just last day of it kind of deal. Didn't see a single animal all day. And I went deep with him with just trying to find tracks and so far into the bush. Didn't find anything. So day two, I brought him down here and I was like, well, I'll go to some of my areas. We'll check some cameras and we'll just see what's floating around. I know the areas well anyway. Like I'm not just seeing if there's anything that is legal, I guess, in the area.
Yeah.
And 15 minutes into our hike, we run into a herd of 70 elk. It's the coldest day of the year so far. So they're just going crazy. And they didn't spot us. So they actually ended up going right to where we wanted to go. So we followed this herd for probably 2-3 hours into where I suspected there were some deer. And his eyes were just the size of saucers, big smile, because they're bugling and just cow calling. And we were within 30, 40 yards of them the whole time. Just kept sneaking up. So to go from Sitka deer to here you go. Here's some elk out for you.
They were going nuts then.
It's normally like.
what type of year was that? What time of year was that?
That would be beginning of November, like November 2nd. So
really, and they're going nuts then, eh?
It seems like when you get the first couple cold days of the year, like it was about, and it's not cold, but it was like minus 10.
Right.
And it was a sudden drop too from, you know, plus 2, plus 1, all of a sudden it drops down to minus 10.
Yeah.
And gets them riled up. And it didn't matter. I took them to a few different spots and it didn't matter where we went, different elk herds. You could hear them down in the sloughs and just chirping more than you ever hear them chirping in hunting season, but they're just they're way more relaxed.
Yeah, for sure. Nobody's shooting on them.
Yeah. But pretty awesome. Even though I'm around them all the time, I love it. I'm just like a kid in a candy store listening to them.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, those I've heard elk call all year, but nothing crazy like that for sure.
Really? Oh man. I don't know. When it comes to elk hunting, you know, you got your two different myths about you got to be super quiet and sneaky and you got your other side. Yeah. And it's like, they aren't, they can be sneaky and quiet, but they're also one of the loudest obnoxious animals out there when you actually run into them in the right mood.
Oh yeah. And if they don't know you're there, if they're just walking around casually, they're loud, man.
Oh yeah.
Like even a single elk is loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not, they don't sneak up on you like a deer will.
When you're out elk hunting, do you ever, if you get one riled up or where it doesn't seem like they're paying too much attention to who or what you are, do you ever break branches and like be just as aggressive or, you know, just as loud, or do you try to sneak in?
Yeah, I sneak in usually. So like the elk I passed on this year, it was second day of archery. And I found the herd the day before and there was a bull in there. I couldn't tell it that day. I couldn't tell which bullet he was that I was looking for, because 2 days before the season opened, I had seen a bigger bull. And so I thought it was that bull for some reason. Oh. So, but it was later in the afternoon. I was like, okay, well, there's no point in me trying to bust in here now. So next morning I went in there, threw a bunch of just cow calls out, just to see if I can figure out where that bull was. And then I got a bugle from him. So I just started walking towards where I heard the call. Every 15 minutes, I let out another one. They weren't moving. I kept going. Let out another one. And then as I got closer, I just start calling a little more aggressively and just a little more aggressively, a little quicker, just to sound like a cow elk's coming in.
Yeah.
And I walked up to the tree end of the tree line. Sure enough, in the little clearing, I could see him, and he was just a smaller. He wasn't the bull I was after. He was a small 6x5.
Yeah.
And I passed on him, but I could have had him at like 50 yards.
Easy. Oh, man.
That was on second day of archery. And I was like, well, you know what? There's still lots of time.
Yeah. Isn't that the worst thing that ever goes through our mind, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, and you know, if I hadn't seen that bull in the same area 2 days before it opened,
yeah,
I would have taken that one.
That's fair enough.
Just because those are the only two that were 6 points that I seen that last year. So, but he was gone. Never seen him again. Never seen him on any of my trail cameras.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I passed on that guy. And then I looked for that elk for the rest of the year. Couldn't find him again. Couldn't find any of him. I got him on my trail cameras a few times, but I think there was some other hunters in there, and they were in there bugling and just making a bunch of noise and doing some calling. And I think he smartened up right away.
Yeah. They educated him pretty quick.
Yeah. And it doesn't take long either. So
no, but wow. Do you find that you're having a hard time finding 6 points out there? Is it just a matter of looking a little harder? We're having a hard time out here, and I'm not talking. I mean, yes, our elk populations are severely in decline, but we're starting to notice fewer sixes, but our herd bulls are turning out to be giant fives.
Yeah,
and probably so, genetic fives that will never be sixes. And they're monsters. I'm proud of any, I don't care if it's a spike, I'll take anything. It's food in the freezer. I don't need antlers. But these things are monster fives, and be like, there's nothing around here that's going to beat that thing up.
Yeah. Why do you think there's less elk out there in the Kootenays?
Oh, man. I know you've talked about it before on some of your other shows there, but mismanagement. It's.
Yeah. You think that's the number one, or you think like road access, or just that all ties into management?
I think it's a huge issue. I don't think one thing solves it all. I know a lot of people want to blame just predators, and that's the only thing they want to blame.
Yeah,
and
that's easy to blame, right?
It's the easiest
thing to do is just to point your finger at wolves and cougars and say, you're to blame. But
they are definitely out there. There's way the balance between predator and prey is way out of whack. So it definitely does have a play in it. But I think a lot now on top of that is logging. And I'm pro logging. Been a logger. Everybody around here is loggers. I'm all for it. Does create habitat. But when you don't decommission roads afterwards, you're allowing people to go up into areas that don't normally get up there. So, you know, even in springtime, they might be elk, deer, whatever, they might be calving, they might be having their fawns, and now you're stressing them out by driving through, and they're running. And you're also, you know, now going back to the predators, you've got highways now right to the tops of the mountains that they can travel on, and we know how fast they can travel. So where some
on a road, a pack of wolves is gonna, you know, it's gonna terrorize, and it's gonna get a deer or an elk, no problem.
Yeah. And where, you know, moose, elk, and, you know, like caribou and stuff, caribou especially love the tops of the mountains. You know, they could escape a lot of wolves up there in that deep snow. But when you start sending highways up to them, it makes it a little easier for them. They expend less energy to go after them. So
yeah, I know Robin and Unra and I, we talk about road deactivation all the time. And it's one of those things like, yeah, they deactivate roads, but digging a little ditch at the end of a road, at the beginning of a road, isn't deactivating it. It's got to be turned up. Because I mean, like, how many times have you been in the backcountry and you come across a road that's supposed to be like, quote, in quotations, deactivated, but it's, you know, it's just dug up with an excavator. And now there's, you know, now it starts out with quads going through, and then it's side by sides, and then it's small buggies, and then it's pickups. And then why the fuck do you even have the road deactivated at all?
It's pointless. Yeah. And you know, the ones that I do come across that are actually deactivated and turned up and everything's dug up, they're old. So, yeah. I mean, I'm no professional or anything at these kind of things, but I'm thinking it's cost. Dig a ditch. It's cheap. You know, they cover their asses for whatever the regulations are.
Yeah, I think there must be a minimum requirement that's set by set forth by the ministry that they have to do. And obviously, if something's going to cost you $1,000 or something's going to cost you $100,000, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's a pretty easy call business wise.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Put yourself in their shoes. So, and it's that's up to the government to figure that stuff out. That's, and to me,
management. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was going to say that comes back to management, whereas, you know, they got to set better regulations.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing I find around our entire valley, it's not specific to just here. And I understand both sides. Our benches in the Columbia Valley here, they're winter range. Like I was saying before, all the elk come down, all the animals, period, come down. And our benches, the wetlands, everything is what they feed on for the whole winter. But you're seeing more and more high fence being put up around farms, golf courses.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's like, well, if there's not enough food around to support, you know, X amount of animals, populations are going to decline. And again, that's not putting it on them. It's, you know, I understand elk are very destructive.
Yeah. I mean, you talk to any farmer and they don't have a lot of good things to say about elk. And from my understand from what I heard from a little bird is, here in Region 8, we have a cow elk draw. Do you guys have a cow elk draw?
I think there's a couple LEH ones that fold around. I can't remember if they were left active in this last year, but they were the year before. Not many, but a few.
Right.
But so I'm not sure.
Well, anyway, from my understanding is, I mean, this is just, you know, bar talk talking, right? I mean, there's no validity to this at all. But from my understanding is that there was a few farmers in the Christian Valley that got so fed up with the elk, they called the government and said, hey, if you don't do something to decline the elk numbers here, we're going to get somebody in here that will. So, and then they came out with that cow elk draw.
Oh yeah.
So like I said, I don't, you know, that's just, you know, word going around. There's no validity there. I don't know firsthand.
And I get it. Like that's their livelihoods and all that kind of stuff. And if everybody hasn't seen the damage that, you know, a herd of 70 elk can do to a field, it's amazing how quickly they can wreck it. Or even hay bales left out in a field that haven't been collected yet, we'll make quick work of those things too.
Yeah, and I get it. I mean, those farmers, that's, you know, that's food for their cattle, that's their livelihood. So
absolutely.
Yeah, so I get it. I mean, so, as a hunter, obviously I would prefer to see the elk have something to eat or some winter place to forage. But
I think one of the other big things that I'm starting to hear come up is the, not as much down by where we are here, I think more in your area and Prince George and stuff, is the spraying after logging so that the deciduous trees don't grow back.
Yeah.
And I don't know, up in there, you start looking at the stats for elk and start listening to people for, well, moose and deer and everything, and everything's in decline up there as well. And they eat all that stuff. So I don't know. It's replanting of monoculture forests, so you get all that pine and spruce and replant with that in your forest. I think we've all walked into a big patch of, you know, poplars and aspen and all that kind of stuff, and you walk back into the pine and spruce, there's a huge temperature difference.
Oh yeah, definitely.
They cool off the forest, so I don't know if that has any play into the forest fire issue, but it seems like a massive problem.
I think it does. I mean, around here we have, just because of our temperatures, like down in southern British Columbia, we have mostly pine trees.
Yeah.
Just because they're the only thing that can sustain, you know, the 40 degrees for any length of time throughout the summer. But for sure. But I know the spraying, I know that's a huge issue. There's people, you know, and there's a lot of people lobbying to stop the spraying. So, yeah. But again, that goes into management. I mean, there's got to be people looking into that. There's got to be biologists who are, you know, who would have a better understanding of it than you and I do. And, but again, you know, does the government listen to what they're saying?
Yeah. And the only thing that worries me is if they aren't looking into it, is it because they're worried about somebody coming out and saying, okay, yeah, this is really, really bad. And then like anything else, well, whose fault is it?
Yeah.
Fingers point. So they don't want it pointed at them, and it might not even have anything to do with them, or maybe from generations ago.
Yeah. So, well, exactly.
Snowball effect has gotten so big that, you know, I don't think there are any easy solutions. It's kind of scary out there.
It's a mess, man.
Yeah.
It's a hot mess, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
I missed what you're saying about genetics there. I do find that a lot. In this one area, there was a 5-point bull in there that had a herd I don't even know. I stopped hunting in that area just because there was no other. He was just, the only herd bull I would ever see in there was that 5-point, like for 4 years in a row. And I was always waiting for him to pop another tine out.
Yeah.
Never did. And he was fucking huge, man. Big 5x5.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Do you think part of that person, and correct me, like I don't hunt up in your area and that down here, I think back in the day, it used to be 3-point or better. And talking to the old timers, you know, you wouldn't see a lot of sixes and stuff like that because everybody would be popping them off left, right, and center. But once they put the 6-point season in, they started seeing bigger bulls. But now that it's been in so long and with access and everything, I think going back to the access for people and predators and all that kind of stuff, a lot of the sixes are being taken out of the equation.
Yeah. Well, and their ground too. Like I've hunted in the Kootenays there.
Yeah.
Down by, down in the southeastern part of the Kootenays, and the forest fires down there blew me away.
Yes. Yeah. It's something else.
Yeah. And my buddy I was hunting with, he said that used to be like a haven for elk.
We used to be the Serengeti, this entire valley of BC for animals.
Yeah.
And it's pretty desolate now. It's crazy. But I think once enough sixes get shot, you know, some nice ones. And even though there's sixes out there, it's like some of these mature 5-points, they end up doing a bunch of the breeding. And I think just over time, it's not a quick thing. I think over time, some of these, like you say, the elk that are big, they never turn to sixes and they're passing on that dominant 5-point gene.
Yeah. And it's the same with mule deer. I've seen tons of big 3-point mule deers, big threes, huge, like probably 6-year-old 3-points.
Yeah. And the mass on them.
Yeah. Massive. Big. And I'm talking like, you know, the bases of them are, man, they're big. You couldn't grip your hand around them.
Something else.
Yeah. We've seen a big guy this year. Huge.
That's awesome. Our mule deer just starting to come back here. Yeah. Last was pretty bad there. I think I went about 3 or 4 years without seeing a single legal mule deer, and I didn't see any big threes either. And this year, or the last 2 years, I know myself and a few other people that I've talked to started seeing 4-points again.
Oh yeah.
And more of them that we've, you know, in combination that we've seen in the last few years combined, which is great. So I'm hoping.
Well, I feel with those 4-points though, like it's if they're close to an area where there's hunters, as soon as he sprouts a little tiny 1-inch tine, he's done.
Yeah.
He's fucked. You know what I mean? Like it's just, it's so,
Everybody around here would tell you 10 years ago, you could drive around. You wouldn't even have to get out and hike. You literally drive around and you could pass up on 10 4x4s every single day. Yeah. And you'd hold out because like, you know, you see that one or that one that you didn't quite get a shot at. You're like, no, that's the one right there. And now you're lucky to see a legal one.
Yeah. I mean, I see 4-point muleys every year, but again, that's in a place most people aren't willing to get to where I have to go to see him. So but I mean I passed up on 4-point muleys this year. But I seen a lot of big threes I would have loved to take. And
now it's too bad, in my opinion, we don't have a longer archery season.
I mean there's a few things. You know, the same with that spike fork moose. I don't really agree. We have the same draw here. I personally I think what they should do is get rid of the open season for spike fork moose. Just get rid of it. Because I've come across so many in the last 10 years. I can't even count how many 3x3 or 3x4 moose I've come across.
Oh, really?
That have been shot and left just because guys get at, you know, they just misjudge it and they shoot it and they get up to it and they're like, oh, shit. And they just leave it. And the same thing with elk. No, I've come across 5-point elk, just left. I've come across 3-point muleys, left.
Unreal.
Yeah. So like back to the moose, I would like to see get rid of that spike for season. Cause I mean, really, you know, like how many, we've seen in all my years hunting down here in region 8, we've seen one spike fork moose, one, and my dad missed it at 60 yards.
Kicking himself for that one.
I don't know.
I hope you never let him forget about that.
Well, I never do. And the best is my youngest son. My son at the time, he was only, he's 10 now. And at the time he was like 3 or 4 and he still remembers it. And so he lets him have it all the time too. And he's like, yeah, grandpa, remember when you missed that moose?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He feeds it to him. All. No, he gives him a cheap shot every once in a while. But
yeah, I mean, you know, your time's coming, so you better hold on to that story.
Oh, yeah. The headshot, man. Like he had the thing of 60 yards standing broadside. I was up behind it because I pushed him out of the bush down to where they are. They're down a little clearing, him and my kid. And I walked up behind him and I pushed him in the cow out, and it walked out and 60 yards walked in front of him and he missed it.
That's funny.
I remember I couldn't really see it. I was at the tree line, so I shouldn't say it was broadside, but he told me it was broadside. But I remember sitting up there at the tree line and I could hear gunshots and I'm like, where in the fuck is that old man shooting? I'm sitting out there waiting for the dust to clear.
Oh man.
Oh yeah. Oh, he's a freaking cowboy.
That's awesome.
Old timer, you know how they are.
Yeah, I do.
Yep. But yeah, I would like to see them get rid of that spike fork and move to just giving out more LEHs for any bull. You know what I mean? And they should do like different LEHs too, like do an archery LEH and give out a lot of those.
I think that'd be an interesting one.
Yeah. And then, because like, I mean, down in like Alberta and the States, Alberta, I think I'll have to talk to Jim, but anyway, like down in the States, I know they do like, they'll have like an archery elk tag you can get. It's easier to get that tag than it is to get, obviously get a rifle. You have a longer LEH. You got longer with your LEH, you know, to harvest an animal. I'd like to see that. And like, you know, so I don't know with these big, what's that?
Are you the same in your region when it comes to that draw for the moose? Are you the same where you can do the archery season as well with that same LEH? Cause that's what you can do here. It's not specified, but if you get that LEH, you can hunt the archery and the.
Yeah. Well, there's different like region 814, 812, 810. Those are all, they have basically, you can choose to have all of October for any bull for rifle or 2 weeks in November, any bull with rifle.
Oh, okay.
But I know like in your region four, cause my cousin had that draw. He had that draw last year. No, the year before. And they had an opportunity where they could have went for archery only at the beginning, and then they could have went back for a rifle. Yeah. Which was, I thought was a good idea, but I'm talking about just doing like
specific.
So yeah. So an 814 or 812, you put in your LEHs, you could put it for a September moose hunt, but it's archery only.
I gotcha. I like that idea. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We used to have tons of moose around here and we still have some, but it's not something you see too often anymore. And I'd like to see the spike fork taken right out. And there isn't that many tags put out here, I don't believe. But
there's not a lot of tags. Yeah, there's not a lot of tags here in Region 8. Anyway, I mean, there's not a lot of moose compared to like where you and I used to live up in northern BC, where, you know what I mean? Moose.
I'd like to run into a moose like that again. Just it's been a long time. It's been 20 years since I've been up there.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see some of the, just a reminder how big the animals are there compared to here.
Yeah, man, it's pretty neat. I still connect with a lot of guys up there and they have some pretty unreal moose hunts for sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's a dream hunt of mine.
Yeah, but there, you know, same with the archery season, I'd like to see same thing for the mule deer. Like they could go, if they want to, you could go archery all September and have any buck and no rifle season, and don't, you know what I mean? Don't turn it to a 4-point till October. Get rid of the rifle season for mule deer in September, have archery only and just have any buck. That will, you know, it's going to give you the opportunity to get those bigger threes out of there. And plus it'll cut down the rifle season a bit, like I said, I've come across a lot of 3-point dropped mule deer in September.
I'd actually like to up that a bit and go archery for everything for all of September.
Yeah, I'd like that too. I mean,
I'm pretty sure I'm correct.
I'm an archer, so I mean, guys that only shoot rifle they're going to be sitting here going, "Fuck you guys."
Yeah, and I get that, but I'm almost 100% positive we're the only province in Canada that hunts elk in the rut with a rifle.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things look at whitetail, and for here in Region 8, they open for rifle September 10th, and they're open till November 30th. So basically have three months to shoot, and it's any buck to shoot any whitetail. I mean, I don't like personally, I don't hunt whitetail until December, and I hunt with my bow, but like this year I hunted with my bow all year anyway. So, I mean, yeah, I get it. It takes a lot more work to hunt with a bow, but you know, in Alberta, my brother, where he hunts in Alberta, they only have a 2-week rifle season.
That's in November, right?
Yeah, that's in November. And like, so how it works out there is they, for any muley buck in any muley buck, they have to put in for an LEH for rifle, but it's open for archery. So every year they can go hunt muley bucks, but it's archery only.
Okay.
And they're allowed 2 does. I think he said they're allowed 2 does in the region he is. He's in Red Deer, right. So he hunts around there, and he's allowed 2 does and a buck archery, but he has to put in for LEHs, and that's on a 4-year application term. And then, and then he gets to hunt. So if you get that LEH, you can hunt muleys with a rifle, but every 4 years you can only get it every 4 years, right? They work on that point system.
Yeah. I like the system to a point. I see flaws in it, but I don't think there's a perfect system out there.
No, I don't either. And I know a lot of guys. I know. I talked to a lot of guys who are on the point system, and they say they like the lottery better. So
really, until they don't get something for 20 years, 25 years. Yeah,
well, like the moose LEH, I've never gotten the moose draw ever.
We got ours a couple of years ago. I think it was our third year putting in for it. And let's just say there's a couple people across the lunch table that weren't too happy about it because they'd been putting in, I think they told me, for 22 years and they've never even sniffed it.
Well, my cousin for region 814 for the LEH draw, we've both been putting in for that 814 moose draw the same amount of time. He's gotten it twice.
Really?
I haven't gotten it yet. Yeah, so I mean, the flaws like that, you know, and they say that it's, you know, first choice odds are supposed to be better, but I don't see that at all.
So. Yeah, I don't know. I've talked to people who've had it 3 times in 10 years from around here. And
yeah,
I mean, great for them. Crappy for the people who've been waiting 20 some years.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing. If you're going, like, if it worked off the point system, you'd kind of even the playing field a little bit. But I mean, it's tough. The whole thing is, like, basically, I think that our whole regulations in BC have to be restructured.
I think so. I think they got to stop managing. It seems to me like they're managing with the regulations instead of having like a management plan for the next 10, 20 years.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's the Liberals' fault for in the mid 90s there when they kind of amalgamated all fish, wildlife and resources together as one, you know, before it used to be just be a fish and wildlife department. I don't know.
You would think with the amount of public land that we have around here, that it'd be impossible for us to decimate our populations like this.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I talked to my buddy JJ down in Texas there. And we were talking about how much public and private land they have down there.
Yeah.
And I told him how much public land we have up here in British Columbia. He didn't believe it. And I told him it's a fucking mess. And he didn't even know what to say. There's like, I deleted it all, but in the podcast, but there was like a three minute pause. And he's just sitting there looking at me like, fuck you talking about? How is that even possible? I was like, I don't know, dude.
Oh man. Yeah. It's, I don't even do it. I don't even want to see the populations go back for any other reason other than I'd like to see the habitat change. I'd like our kids to be able to enjoy the wildlife the way that we were able to when we were kids. No different than the fish back when for the 3 years I was up in Rupert there and met you guys. It was, I guess, the Serengeti of the fishing times up there. Like you go up there and you'd watch trains of fish right up the river.
Oh yeah, man. We used to fish on the Skeena and like we'd pull spring and
it was awesome.
I remember I pulled this, I was with my brother and I caught this steelhead and man, this thing must have been, it was huge. I wish I had a scale to weigh it back then, but I didn't even think, to be honest, I didn't even think, other than I still have the picture being like, we're both my brother and I were like, man, that thing is huge.
Yeah.
And you know, I wish we would have a scale to see what it was, but it was big. It was, man, I don't know. It was over 20 pounds. It was fucking huge.
I think the biggest one I ever caught off there, I can't even, it was below Cassox or whatever there.
Yeah.
There's a sandbar. I can't remember the name that everybody called the sandbar.
Polymar. Yeah, it was Polymar was up high. That was the bigger one. You used to drive across and down below it was China Bar.
That's right. Yeah, you have to wait till the tides went down to get onto them.
Yeah, you could. I had driven a truck across there once, a funny story. So I used to work in a log yard and a buddy of mine, his dad owned it. And he was my roommate at the time. So he's like, nobody's around. So he's like, hey, let's fucking get out of here. Let's go fishing. So I'm like, oh, how are we going to get out there? He's like, let's take the work truck. So he's like, okay, you drive. So he's drinking beers. I'm driving. We go across and I was like, oh man, the tide, I don't know if we're going to make it. He's like, fuck it, just go. And we get halfway through and the truck stalls and it was a diesel.
Oh no.
And I'm like, oh no.
No.
He's sitting there looking at me, you know, like a deer in headlights. And I right away, I get up, I take my pants off and I jump in the freezing cold water, flip the hood of the truck and I pull off the air filter and get it so the air intake's not in the water. And I go in, I'm pushing on, trying to push that water and it fires up and I get it out. Back onto Polymar, but the tide was going up. I got it out there anyway, but yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I think the biggest deal that I ever caught on there was, I think we did weigh it and it was 24 pounds.
Yeah.
And those memories were awesome.
Yeah, we used to fish out there a lot, man. We spent a lot of time out there. Seen a lot, like I remember fishing out there on China Bar and then like just meet a couple of buddies and then all of a sudden you look up at Polymar and there's three grizzly bears walking down the bank.
They're coming down to check out what you got them for lunch.
They want to know what's for lunch, but they never crossed. It was pretty deep there. You had to cross and you could only go that one certain path to get across to China Bar because it was way too deep on the other side and the current would just push you through. So then they never came across. They hadn't figured it out yet.
Well, it's a good thing.
Yeah. But big bears up there, a lot bigger than down, like down. You see the grizzlies around here and down the Kootenays are nothing like the bears up there.
Yeah. Yeah. You see the odd big one here and there and you're just, you keep remembering like, no, these are little puppy dogs compared to what's up there.
Yeah. Big buggers up there.
Everything's bigger up there.
Yeah. Well, you gotta be.
Yeah. That's the only way to survive up there, I guess.
Yeah, man. Yeah. No, it's good times up there for sure.
Do you ever go fishing up there anymore?
No, man, I haven't been back since 2007 was the last time I was up there. So
okay.
Yeah. And when I was up there, it was around the Christmas holidays. We didn't do any fishing.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Just partied for a week, left.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, good times.
Yeah. No, lots of good times out there for sure. Yeah, I did the same around this Christmas, so I'm in rehab now.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I can't do it. Like I did, drank three nights in a row, and now I'm on severe rehab, January rehab.
I took it easy. It's the wife's birthday coming up here, so she got to do more of the drinking on New Year's Eve. And I kind of stayed mellow and did the driving and stuff. So, yeah, I think last year was my turn. We usually switch, but yeah, it's her birthday week. So she got the benefit this week.
She got to cut loose.
Yeah, which is good.
Right on. You're telling me you're planning a moose hunt this fall?
Yeah, we've got some friends that up in Fort St. John there, and they've been trying to get us to come up for years, and they lived in Fort St. John itself, and they're not hunters. They've got connections and everything like that, and we've been contemplating it, but it's a big commitment to go all the way up there. Like, that's a chunkier hunting season, even financially too.
Yeah.
But this year, last year, I don't know, sometime in this last year, they bought just outside of Fort St. John, quarter section.
Oh, nice.
And it backs on to the Peace River, right into some coulees. I forget the name of the other coulee that goes right down into it, another drainage. And then her brother-in-law's, I guess it's Kitty Corner, and he's got 200 and some acres. And then I guess it sounds like they've kind of, well, her husband has grown up with a lot of the other neighbors, so they all know each other. So I was like, all right, we're going to go up there. And I think I'm going to go up there third week of September or whatever. And
I'm
not sure what's going to, I know there's lots of moose up in there, but whether they're there when I'm there, I think we're going to go for a week or 10 days or something. And then the elk season, I think it's 3-point or better up there.
Right.
And I know she was sending me pictures right at the beginning of September, a whole bunch of mule deer right in her field every day. So I'm just sitting there like, the bow is coming up without a doubt, and I'll bring my wife's rifle and stuff too in case she wants to take a deer.
Oh yeah, nice.
Just in case we can't find anything down here, if we can, you know, if she can fill a tag up there too, that'd be awesome. And I'm gonna kind of scout out the whole area. You know, I'll definitely take advantage of the private stuff, and almost definitely be venturing down into the Peace River and stuff, and seeing what I can find at the bottom and onto all the public land. And if I can find some moose sign, I'm definitely going after some moose.
Yeah. What's that? What's that? Seven. Is that 7B or 7A?
I believe it's 7. They're in this triangle, like right on the tip of it.
Oh yeah. There's
like 3 or 4 MUs that tie into this one little spot that's just from them. I actually like to say it's 7B.
Okay. Yeah.
I'd have to look at the map again. I know we were putting for a couple LEHs up there too this year. Just some elk LEHs. So we'll see what happens there. But
yeah, big moose with your bow.
That's what I'm going to try to focus on this upcoming year. It's I hurt my shoulder mid-August this year, and I still hunted the archery season. Came super close, 13 yards on a nice 4x4 bull, but my mistake when I turned in my tree stand, I hadn't taken the quiver off my bow, and my nocks on my arrows tinged off my tree stand. The thing looked straight up at me. It didn't run, but I couldn't move. I wasn't full draw at that time because I didn't have a good shot. And it never took its eyes off me. And then just the blink of an eye, all of a sudden I had no shot again. It was painful.
Yeah, the
it is
one of those things you only do it once.
Yeah, I will guarantee you I will never make that mistake again. No matter how tired I am. So yeah, that would have been awesome to, that would have been my first archery kill. I've been painfully close virtually every single year that I've been in archery shots, but I think my first year out hunting with a bow, one of my older hunting partners who actually taught me a lot about hunting, 20 minutes into the first season with the bow and bugled in this he was a 5x5 and he came in screaming and we battled it out for a good 20 minutes at 20 yards. But he was on a skid trail and I was just in this natural clearing that ran parallel to it. And it was nothing but alders in between. I could see him clear as day, but couldn't stick an arrow through it if I wanted to.
Was he one of those big genetic 5x5s or just like a little satellite bull?
He was a good size. He wasn't a giant, but he was bigger than the six that was in the area there, but the six wasn't huge either. Neither of them were monsters, but
yeah. I find with those satellite bulls, they're come running, they're more aggressive than the bull sometimes. I mean, if you get right up in the bull's kitchen, like if you get right up close enough to his cows, then obviously he's going to get a lot more fired up. But just in general, I find it those satellite bulls are a lot more aggressive than
it seems to be. I don't know if it's just I don't know, like I guess the king of the castle that's in there is the herd bull. He's not really, they kind of got each other already figured out by the time you arrive in the area, so he's not too worried about a lot of things. And those satellite bulls still want to try to pick off a cow here and there.
And I think I think the herd bull, he uses those satellite bulls a bit, you know what I mean? Like he uses them just to ward off any other bulls that might be a threat to him.
Yeah, I never even thought of that, but well, I could see that for sure. But I tell you, you get one screaming bull coming in at you in archery season, coming into you at 15, 20 yards, you are hooked for life.
Yeah, well, any animal. I mean, if you shoot anything with your bow, it's a whole new ball game.
Yeah,
I had this conversation with my buddy. I'm trying to get him into bow hunting. He shoots his crossbow, and he shot an animal with a crossbow. I'm like, dude, it's not the same. He's like, how can it not be the same? I'm like, you just have to try it. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from people who shoot crossbows. They want to shoot crossbows, whatever. But it's not the same as shooting a bow.
Oh, drawn back on it, having to hold it. You know, at least crossbows are not easy to pack around in the bush.
No,
packed one once, and that was the last of that. And but yeah, I have to agree. To me, a crossbow is just a glorified rifle.
And then you talk to the guys who shoot traditional, they say the same thing about compounds.
So. Absolutely. I got all the respect in the world for those guys and what they do. That's just, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a guy in our club this year. He's a trad boy. And he went out with a couple of our buddies and they had a few tree stands set up in an area. And there was a couple of tree stands he actually couldn't shoot out of because of the length of his bow. So he had to kind of go to a different tree stand where he could actually shoot it properly. And he never got anything, but man, were we all pulling for him. It was just awesome.
Yeah, I'd like to get into it, but it's just one of those things. It's so hard to get into in anything. I mean, you still have to shoot your bow because I try to shoot my bow every day.
Yeah.
And but I mean, this year, fuck, I'm getting older. I got bad shoulder, bad knee, bad hip, fucking mess, man.
As my grandma says,
some work to do.
Getting old ain't for sissies.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe if I'm off the booze for a month or so here, it'll help me recover.
But, well, you know. I don't know. Maybe not.
We'll see.
Yeah. No, I'm. We were talking earlier too, planning on getting a new bow this next couple months here. And yeah, I can't wait to start flinging arrows again every day.
Yeah. I picked exciting. Up the, this year. I'm shooting at the new Matthews bow.
I've heard great things about it. That's the V3X.
Yeah, the VX3.
EX3. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty slick.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's tight. It's like it's really well balanced. It's got the channel, so you can slide the scope right into the riser.
Oh, that dovetail.
Yeah, you can slide the dovetail in there. Now it came. The one I bought, it came with it came with the Matthews, came with the Matthews five pin.
Okay.
But it's pretty small. Like it's pretty tight to your riser. So I'm going to put my old XL on there.
Fair enough.
Out a bit, but yeah.
No, it's, yeah. I've been looking at getting a few little accessories, but I think they'll have to just start getting up into the quality and everything. It obviously starts affecting the price and that. So
yeah,
both first. And then I've been looking at some of those five pin sliders.
Yeah,
man. Those, I'm very, very interested in some of those.
Yeah. When I was talking to Brian Barney from Eastman's Elevated, that's what he uses. And man, he swears by those things. So
you kind of have the best of both worlds, don't you? You got your pin in there, and then you just, whatever it is, I think you pick one pin and that's what you put your sight deep to.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, like I shoot right now in a five pin, and I'll keep a five pin all year. And I start at 30. So I go 30, 40, 50, 60, 70.
Oh,
so
okay.
I don't have a pin under 30.
Gotcha there. Yeah. I've got your 20, 40.
Yeah.
60 kind of deal, or 20, 30, 40, 60.
Right. But, yeah. I just find with the 20 pin, I mean, if you have a 30 pin and you walk forward 10 yards, there's not much difference, really.
Yes, that's right. Well, especially with the bows that are shooting these days, like they're shooting so flat.
Yeah, well, and with your arrow setup too.
Yeah.
Now, if you got a good arrow setup, it makes all the difference in the world. But I just find, I mean, on an animal, it's not going to make any difference. From 20, you know, if I'm shooting it at 20 yards or 30 yards, it's not going to make any difference. You know, that's only less than an inch. Not going to make any difference.
Put a dead center of your kill zone in.
And it's nice to have just that extra pin for 70. And I don't like a lot of pins. I don't like any, like a seven pin. It's just too crowded in the sight housing for me, I find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, well, especially if you don't have different colored pins too. I can see a guy, you know, you get a little buck fever or whatever, and bull fever. And you start looking at your pins and you start mixing up your 50 and 60 or your 40 and 50. And it can be a world of hurt at that distance.
Yeah. And when I practice too, I'll never shoot from 30. I'll shoot from like 33,
34. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, no, that's nice. Yeah, it's I'd like to get you out to our archery facility that we have here. We got shown pictures to a few teammates and stuff down in the States, and they're all blown away. Like, we've got a nice 15, 20 foot high elevated platform and everything.
Oh yeah.
Nice. It's all, you know, stairs and everything going up there. Everything's nice and safe and shooting holes, and man, to practice your elevated shots, and not necessarily from a tree stand too, but you know, like the terrain, you're shooting downhill and your eyes as to how you have to adjust. It's pretty
neat. Yeah. They have at the Kelowna Run Gun Club here, they actually have a 3D archery setup. So you can go in there and you can shoot. Yeah, they've got nine different targets. You walk through there, there's elevated, up high, down low. So
this is an indoor facility?
No, that's all outdoor.
Outdoors. Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's ours. We have we usually have two 3D courses set up for most of the year when there's no snow. We don't want our targets getting wrecked or anything. But we've got kind of like your easier course and warm-up course. And then we have our extreme course as well. And when we do our 3D shoot, we actually add a third one in the middle. So you can kind of get your warm-up and your intermediate. And even our guys that set up the extreme, they lose arrows and they know the distances.
Yeah.
So it's a blast.
Do you have a lot of archers down there?
We've done pretty good the last couple of years. COVID kind of put a damper on us though. Like, we've got a lot of 3D shoots in our valley here, you know, the Cranbrook Crest and Fernie, and all that kind of stuff. And up here in Invermere, we started ours, it was 3 years ago, and 1 year we had to cancel. And I think we had 60 or 70 shooters the very first year. And we're trying to squeeze it in between other shoots that are established. You know, they've been around for years and years and years. So it's kind of hard to get all the archers to come when a lot of them, you know, they do a circuit, you got to do family time too. So
yeah,
go here this weekend and next weekend, need a weekend off with your family and stuff to do stuff. So we actually changed it up this year. And I believe we're going to hold ours in July this year, July 11th, the weekend after the long weekend.
Oh yeah.
There's nothing going on anywhere. And we did that last year. And it was pretty good. I think we had 40 or 50 shooters, and that was all last minute because they just opened up.
Yeah,
opened up COVID stuff. Yeah, so we were happy with that. And anybody that's new to our shoot are blown away. And we always hear we'll never miss another one, just because we have the terrain that we have. We change things up. and we have just, it's fun. Like it's, mm-hmm. it's crazy real life stuff that you are going to be dealing with.
Yeah. We'll have to come check that out. That sounds pretty,
Yeah. I'll send you once I'll have to confirm it, but I'm almost positive that's when it is. And yeah, I'll definitely invite you down for that. It's a hoot. We got camping and, you know, there's fishing lakes everywhere. We're only 5 minutes from Radium Hot Springs too. So even if a person doesn't want to drag their trailer all the way down, there's hotels and all kinds of stuff real close by. So it's pretty awesome.
Oh, one sec here, Pete. Dying here. Better now. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Had a coughing attack there.
Yeah. No, I think you'd have a blast. I know. Just getting some, like to have some different people from different areas come down and then be like, all right, yeah, I'll pass that on to your buddies and
yeah, bring for your
family down and have a good time.
Yeah, no, we'll tow the trailer down and we'll get after it. Do you have stuff for the young kids?
We do. Yeah, we've got our 3D shoots actually set up too. If the kids are into archery, we make sure there's pins up close. So the kids totally separate all the categories. So, you know, we like to make sure all the kids come away with something, prizes or, you know, adults, whatever. You can earn it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
The kids are what it's all about. You know, we want to make sure that we get them hooked and stuff. So yeah, last year we were kind of limited a bit on some fun shoots because of regulations, but we do love to do stuff for the kids on top of the, you know, making sure that they can shoot and making sure the young kids' marks are close enough where they're going to be hitting targets and everything. And then we do some fun games and stuff in between, you know, throughout the day. And it's usually a 2-day shoot. You can do it all in one if you choose. But if you don't want to, you definitely don't have to. You can take your 2 days to relax and just kind of do what you want to do.
Cool. What's the name of that? What did you guys call that last year?
We got that one as the Bighorn 3D shoot.
Cool. And guys, can you look it up on Facebook or is there an online
page? I believe it's on our site. We actually just went, just got our club in with the new century here. And we have our own website now that we're working on.
Got your own webpage?
Nice. Yeah. So, and that's for the Lake Windermere District Rod and Gun Club.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's the ULR on there? What's the handle?
Oh, I'm going to have to get back to you on that one there. I'll have to send you a link on that one.
I'll put it in the show notes for people listening.
Yeah. So I'd like to, we got enough people in our club that are tech savvy that we'll kind of bring it up with the times. And we're one of the few that actually do it. And then we'll, you know, try to get everybody's pictures in and stuff like that for our shoots. And it's a good time. And then if you're just coming to the area, I mean, we've got lots of lakes and stuff around here for camping and mm-hmm. a little bit of fishing and relaxing. And like Invermere is only, you know, 10 minutes away. We've got a huge lake there.
Yeah.
We are. And, you know, there's Columbia River and Radium Hot Springs and all kinds of backcountry lakes close by.
Yeah, definitely. No, that'd be it sounds like a blast. I'll load the family up and tow them down there. And maybe I'll bring the boat along too and do a bit of fishing and maybe we'll make a little holiday out of it.
Yeah. I'll definitely recommend it and definitely send you some links and stuff that you're able to do around here.
Yeah. I think, outside of Vancouver, there isn't anywhere in BC you really can't find something fun to do.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's made for the outdoorsmen and outdoors people.
Yeah. Cool, man. Why don't you tell people a bit about your Instagram page?
Oh yeah. I started that. It was just a year and a bit ago. It's called Kootenay Outdoor Adventures. Just try to post I got a lot of trail cameras out year round and I spend a lot of time in the outdoors with my family. So just try to post a lot of trail cam photos and that too, so people can see some of the wildlife. And I do try to get them with my regular cameras and stuff too, but kind of take the adventure that we go on, whether it's, you know, hiking or camping or fishing, and just try to post some of that. And then a few of the other sponsors that I've been lucky enough to kind of coordinate with to do a little bit of advertising for them and push their product out a little bit. And it's been quite the adventure. Never really thought about doing much online in that. It was a couple of years ago elk hunting and I had a wolf sneak up to 5 yards on me when I was laying down in a blind. We were eye to eye. And after I told my wife that, our eyes, I saw that wolf's eyes and they were like saucers on a cartoon. And I'm sure mine were the exact same. And after I told my wife that, she's like, you need to start taking pictures and videoing, you know, like all your little adventures that you have. Cause it's like all of us, you know, like some of the crazy stories that you have when you come back from the backcountry.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Or just some of the views, like it's dumbfounding what we have for scenery and stuff like that. I think a lot of us that are used to it sort of take it for granted.
And yeah, I'm guilty of that. I totally take it for granted. I mean, I'm awful with taking photos and video and shit. I'm terrible. We've always had it, right? So I just expect everybody else to have the same, but slowly I'm getting better.
Yeah. And that's kind of the big thing is starting to, like, as I post stuff that, like, yeah, even a town deer, you know, we get some beautiful town bucks and everything. Take a picture of that. And there's a lot of people who go crazy over it. And for us, yeah, it's just like, oh, it's just that dumb deer was eating my flowers yesterday. And, you know, we kind of get annoyed at them, but they're really cool for other people to see. And it's, I don't know, some of our backcountry views and that, some glaciers and get up to the top of the mountain. And it's just the quietness. Like,
yeah, well, especially where you are there.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, to not hear, you know, not hear the airplanes, not hear traffic. You can just sit back and just enjoy nature the way that it is. It's, I love filming some of that stuff, taking pictures and that. And it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, that's one thing about Kelowna I've noticed in the last, since I moved here, is that, you know, it's just becoming such a fast-growing city that, you know, it's you have to get away. You know, when I first moved here, it was a lot different than it is now. You didn't hear airplanes and there wasn't traffic jams for, you know, 4 days a week. And
yeah.
But now it's crazy now. So it's nice to get away. That's why we have a little getaway spot for sure.
Yeah. I do not do well in big crowds. I'm definitely a small town boy.
Yeah.
And I like, and when, you know, I'm all about people come out here. We're in a vacation destination here. We have lots of second homes out here. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of see a bit of the city mentality, and you want to sit there and, you know, just coming, being in a rush. I'm not talking about being rude or anything like that. And be like, why don't you guys slow down and just enjoy what you guys have out here right now? Like, it's not, I know what you guys are coming from.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just it.
Everything's back in the last.
Rush, rush, rush. Everybody's in a fucking rush.
Yeah. And be like,
yeah. And I'm guilty of it too, man. So you got, how do you like that Scree gear?
Oh, man. Scree. This is, the first higher end camo outdoor clothing I've tried.
Yeah.
It is something else. I put it through the ringer this year. And there's lots of times, you know, I ran the cheaper stuff for the last few years. And there's lots of times I was cold, miserable, and I can't tell you how many hunts I had to pull the pin. But this year, man, just staying dry and warm with that gear is something else. And I love the patterns that they have too. Like, you know, you go to Walmart or any of those other places and you see the mossy oak patterns and all that kind of stuff. To me, that's all those patterns and stuff are all kind of gauged for the States. We don't have that stuff here. I don't know about Eastern Canada, maybe they do, but we don't have anything like that out here. So these kind of breakup patterns are awesome. And I'm running the Solus pattern right now, which seems to be really good year round. For the Kootenay area here, and they've got some subalpine. I can't remember the name offhand of the other pattern. It's a great pattern as well. And right. It's for your more open areas and everything. And it's something else.
Yeah. I've seen it. I haven't tried it. Right. I primarily run Sitka gear.
Okay. Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to try. I see they're gaining a lot of popularity and there's a lot of guys using them. I think a lot of it to do is, they sell, you buy direct from them, don't you?
So yes.
You're cutting out all the middleman costs.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing is it's cheaper. It's not cheap like what you find in your Walmart.
Yeah. It's good quality. Just a cheaper
very price. Good quality, but it's cheaper than Sitka and how do you pronounce it? QU.
Yeah.
And so it's cheaper. No. So it's more bang for your buck. And like I've sat, hiked everything in the most miserable conditions this year. And I haven't cut a single hunt short this year like I normally do. The stuff just performs. It's something else.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see it. I see it everywhere now. I mean, it's gained a lot of popularity, so it's got to be good.
Yeah. Yeah. I've told a few people who I know through other aspects. They don't live here, but you know, sometimes it's tough to buy something you can't try on.
Yeah.
Unless you have a store near you or, you know, but they don't really, I think they've got some outlet places that are just for Scree. They don't sell anything else, but, I've been like, I'd loan you it in a second. Like, you won't go back. once you get to it. Like you just
I know hardcore archery here, they've got a little corner set up where you can try it on and get
some. Oh, do they really?
Yeah, and then you punch it in, you order directly through them.
Yeah.
So you don't buy it through the store, you buy it through them, but the hardcore archery's just got a little display for them.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I've seen a few setups like that just with them putting it up. I didn't know any of the specific locations and stuff, yeah. But yeah, their
sizing is a tricky one because what you wear your hunting gear, like with anyone, what you're wearing, like with a Sitka pan, it's not what I wear.
Okay.
Like my jeans is totally different. So
yeah. And they've got a few of their different series too. They'll tell you right on the site, like with their sizing charts.
Yeah.
Like sort of their hard scrabble stuff. Their gear there is more of an athletic fit. So you're going to want to order a size up from what you would think. You know, you're not going to order your jean size.
You're right.
Yeah. I like to order it a little bit big so I can layer. I can wear it for more of the year.
Yeah.
And you see, that's how I gauge it because I'm always a layering person. Like, yeah,
layering is huge. It's all about layering and your clothes. That's the thing about your hunting gear. If it doesn't fit properly, it's not going to do its job. So like, I know guys that they'll buy stuff too big. Just because they say, oh, I like it baggy, lets me move. But first of all, okay, like if you're buying something that's too big, it's going to be heavier.
Yeah.
So you're carrying more weight than you have to. It's going to have more space in it. So it's going to be harder to heat up, you know. So you got to pick the right gear that fits.
Especially if you're rifle versus bow. Like if you're bow, you can't have all that bagginess.
No, it's a lot harder to shoot if you look like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man out there.
That's right. So yeah, and the other thing I like about too is lifetime warranty. You know, you break it, they'll replace it, and the customer service is second to none. So it kind of takes away, you know, a lot of your fears. You know, I'm gonna spend some money on this stuff and something breaks, and what am I gonna do now? Like, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous some of the pricing of some gear you can buy. I mean, a lot of guys definitely have a hard time spending $900 on a jacket that they're only going to wear for a month a year.
Well, and that's it. And I think we're kind of blessed, like in our province, how much of the year we get to hunt.
Yeah.
And I keep.
Yeah. Well, I hunt every month except for basically July, but I mean, technically out checking trail cameras and doing all that shit. So, I mean, that's technically you're still.
But yeah, for all those people who only get a small sliver of the year. Yeah. I can't see it. So having something that's a little more affordable and, you know, it's like today we were talking earlier, it's nasty out right now. It's probably blowing 40K. Snow's going to start dumping here. Well, I'm putting on my scree stuff and I'm only checking cameras. If I have a coyote come in front of me, that'll be exciting.
You throw your snowshoes on too, I guess, eh?
Yeah, right now last year I never had to till the very end. But yeah, this year I'm already,
I never had to at all last year, at all. Never had to put them on once. Like I use my crampons all the time, but I love those things just because I hate falling around like an idiot.
So, yeah, no, I hear you.
But this year I'm definitely going to have to, because I'm going to go up this coming week. I'm going to go up and start doing some cat and dog hunting.
Well, that's exciting. I've never done the cat hunting before.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. I mean, I got a cougar last year and I got a buddy and he's got, he had a lot more dogs. He got rid of them. But we hunted with dogs sometimes. And then I just ran tracks by myself without the dogs sometimes. Okay. It's a lot of work. The day when I got my cougar last year, I didn't have any dogs that day, and it took a lot of work to get to him. I was doubling back lots just because, I mean, it's so easy for a cat to go, you know, do a zigzag and an S and then circle back, but he was on a kill.
Oh,
so it actually worked out, and then he didn't leave the tree.
Now, did you bring your bow or did you bring your rifle for that?
I used a rifle.
Nice.
Yeah, this year I'm using my bow. So
that's exciting. See any
wolves or lynx or anything? Well,
yeah.
Take a pop at it with my bow. Wolves are gonna be tough. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes with wolves. I don't know. If it gets to the point where I'm like, fuck this, I'll just bring my rifle.
Yeah, when it comes to the coyotes and the wolves, I think I'd be kicking myself if I missed out. I mean, yeah, it's super cool to get it with your bow, but I think I'd be kicking myself if I missed an opportunity to drop a couple wolves or.
Yeah, wolves are a big one. I mean, coyotes, I find they're not too bad. They're a little more curious. They'll stop. And if you're not an immediate threat, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you're not going to get within 30 yards of them. It's going to be a, you know, 60, 70 yard shot. But
yeah. Yeah, no doubt. No, but those wolves, those things are tough. They are hard to hunt.
Yeah, the wolves are going to be tricky. So that's, like I said, we'll see. I'm going to try it, but I'm not, I might not stick to my guns.
Are you going to use electronic calls or some mouth calls?
Yeah, I use both. I use electronic
and
the mouth calls. I prefer the mouth calls better.
All right.
Just because I find I don't get carried away. Like with the electronic calls, you can just sit there and you can just get carried away with the calls. And, you know, the cadence of the electronic calls is not necessarily the same as what the wolves are doing or what call you need to be doing at that time. So I find with just the mouth call, I find I don't get carried away. It's a little more work because obviously you have to look for fresh tracks and stuff. But
yeah, I got a tip from a good buddy of mine who's a CEO. And he said from his experience out in the prairies and stuff, one of his favorites of all time, he couldn't come up with the exact call, but he said a mule deer fawn in distress.
Yeah.
And coyotes go absolutely nuts around it. Yeah. I've never tried that, but I think I might.
Yeah.
It's been wondering if different areas, you know.
Yeah, I think so. And I think I mean, there's guys that can, like, there's guys that are, that call coyotes and wolves just as good as, like, Steve Smith calls elk. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah.
You know, that's what they devote their time to. But it's definitely a lot more than just going, sitting out there and blowing on a predator call or hitting the button on your electronic call. There's definitely a lot more to it than that.
Yeah. I'm always impressed with those guys with any kind of mouth reads, you know, like, I don't care if you're calling elk or predators. It's pretty crazy what people can do.
Yeah. I don't use I have the predator call, them, the read. For the mouth read for Steve Smith sells it again. It's a coyote howl, and you can also use it as a distress call.
Oh, okay.
I don't use that one. I use his one you blow into. He's got a little red,
kind of like a bite and blow kind of.
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah.
So okay.
Use that, but I mean for elk calling, yeah, definitely the only way is a mouth read for sure.
Do you use the Smith ones?
I used to use those ones that Phelps Game Calls had, but then after I was talking to Steve Smith on the show, I got a bunch of his calls, and now I'm strictly use his, like, just the tape they use is way better. It took me a while to get used to it.
Yeah,
just because it wants to slide around in your mouth a little bit more, but the sound you get out of them is way better.
Well, that's cool. Guys, yeah. I switched this year to Wapiti River, throughout of Alberta.
Right.
And I had problems. I don't know if it's, I use a read. I've got some hard calls for cows and stuff. Because a lot of times I like to sound, depending on the situation, I like to sound like a small herd. So I'll have four or five different cow calls going, plus my mouth read. But I don't know if it was just the shape of my mouth. I've used pretty much everything out there and they work. But I found a lot of times I just couldn't get that 100% good seal. Mm-hmm. And after talking to a couple guys at Wapiti River there, they can put a hard or soft dome on.
Yeah, so right.
With a soft one, just see how that works. And man, I haven't had anything seal like that. Like I don't think I had a single blown call all season this year. It was crazy.
Yeah, you definitely got to get used to them. But I mean, like, I have a call in my truck 12 months of the year, so I'm always blowing on that thing. It could be February and I'll be blowing on that diaphragm call and people look over like, what the fuck is this idiot doing?
Yeah. Well, that's the only way to do it is to practice. So it's second nature. Like getting over that gag reflex when you first start out with whatever kind you're using.
Yeah. Well, I found the biggest thing is when you're turkey, like I started when turkey hunting, right? So you use a mouth call for turkey hunting. But it's the same thing. I mean, once you figure out how to use a diaphragm call, you can use it. Like once you get over that gag reflex, you're good to go. Right. So if you're using it for turkey, then you know it's a lot easier to transition to using it for not that specific call, but a diaphragm call for elk, and then kind of vice versa. So.
Well, at the turkey, I got to practice on a lot. I start out trying to make turkey sounds, and I end up going back to elk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can't. I don't know what it is. It's just, I don't know.
The turkey. There's a lot of, but I mean, there elk. There's a lot of sounds too. But I kind of just stick when I'm turkey hunting. I stick to, like, I'll do a gobble with my diaphragm call.
Okay.
Which is like awesome for locating the birds.
Yeah.
And then I just do a little chirp, and that's all I need. I find, you know, when I first start turkey hunting, awful, just overcalling, right? Just
do you guys have lots up there?
Yeah, we got quite a bit actually. Yeah, I never got a spring turkey this year.
Okay.
But I got one in the fall.
All right, right on.
So it's funny, like such a frustrating year chasing those fucking birds this spring. I was pretty much done with it, And then I was like, okay, well, lick my wounds a little bit here and I'll try to go for a fall bird around Thanksgiving, and it worked out. So
well, that's
back
good.
On board now, back on the train.
We had quite a few around here, and I don't know. I don't know about your season in your MU there, but or your region, but ours is the 15th of April.
Yeah.
And I find it's almost a little too late.
It is. Yeah. That's ours. Is the same. Ours is the same. Ours is April 15th to the middle of May.
April 15th.
So, and depending on the weather, if it's a lot of, if there's still a lot of snow, we're good. Like we can walk into that rut still, be fine.
Yeah.
But if we get April 15th and there's not as much snow, we figure we're just catching the tail end of it. It's already over. That's what we find.
And that's what I've, we've got turkeys in our town here. They're a pain in the butt in town. Right. Cause a lot of damage, but I usually watch them April 1st and just kind of put my head down and walk, do the walk of shame when I see them already scrapping and be like, man, it's going to be too late by the time I get out there.
Yeah. And then you got it. Well, I find if it's a little later, then you don't have to worry about going so early in the morning, which is a bad thing. I mean, you're still going to get them. You'll still get them. Like you can still call them in. You just got to be a lot more patient. And, usually once they leave the roost, they go to feed, and then, around 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, you can still hammer on your call. I mean, obviously you don't want to be doing it all the time, but every 15 minutes or so, just throw out a hen call. And then you just got to be patient though, because it could take 2 hours. I remember one time I started calling at like 10:30 and a bird walked in at 1:00.
Really?
Yeah. And he didn't make any sound, just walked in.
That's crazy. Now, have you taken one with your bow yet, or just shotgun?
Yeah, I've taken with my bow. Yeah.
All right. That's my goal. That was my main thing this year. And I never saw one.
Oh yeah.
It just appeared on me. And I was just like, I have a spot that a little bit of private property. There's lots of people that can hunt it, but I don't know what happened, but they just all disappeared in the area. And be like, no, this is like, may not get a shot at one, but they're always in the area. But they were just gone by April 15th. I was just like, I had no clue what to do or where to go then.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I think you can use those single blade arrows. I think those would be really good because they're just, you get them top of the neck.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen those. I tried this year. I was shooting a six blade, if you can believe it or not.
Six blade. Wow.
From Black Widow Innovations.
Oh yeah.
And they fly like darts. There's a lot of blade there, but that's what I was trying to hammer all my animals with this year.
Yeah. I went to 125 grain expandable this year.
Oh, nice.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Worked really well for you.
Yeah. It was awesome. I mean, yeah. The cut penetration that thing has is insane.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I've always shot fixed heads before, like fixed blade. And I don't know, just this, they're just so, it's just all about shot placement with
absolutely
that expandable. It's amazing. You get no drift or no nothing. But I know for those birds, I've seen, what's that guy's name on TV? He's the guy who shoots those birds out of the air, and he speared a grizzly bear.
I know who you're talking. I can't think of the name, but I know
I've watched him with Tim Robbins or something like that. Tim Robbins. Anyway, but he was shooting these single blade arrows, and he's cutting the heads off the birds.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So
that's some pretty good accuracy too. Like you gotta do a lot of practice. Not everybody's just walking out doing that, because those things are moving. Like they are bobbing and weaving and.
Oh yeah. They're not easy to hit them with your bow. I mean, yeah, you never, like I've never hit them where I was aiming.
Yeah.
It's like I aim for the bottom of the throat, and I usually get them like around feet or something. So I got one on a wing once.
Oh really?
Yeah, it went to fly away and the arrow went right through his wing, knocked his wing off.
Oh man, it's not a bird I would, or it's not an animal in general I'd take a 50 yard shot at. That's a up close and personal for me anyway.
Yeah, I can't remember the one. I got one in the fall this year at the bow too, and I can't remember what it was. I shot it at, I want to say 38 yards or something like that.
Oh, okay. What's your draw length?
28 and a half.
All right, same as me. Yeah. What do you run for? Do you know what your general setup weighs, like with your arrow and your broadhead and stuff?
Well, I'm running, this year last year I was shooting full metal jackets, and I was around, I think it was 585.
That's a nice heavy arrow.
Yeah, this year I'm a lot lighter. I'm still shooting a 125 grain broadhead, but I'm not shooting the 75 grain insert. And I'm shooting a smaller diameter. I'm shooting those vapes this year.
Yeah.
And they're the 4 millimeter. So they're a little thinner. And I went from a 4 fletched arrow to back to a 3 fletched arrow. So I'd say I haven't really done the math on it, but I'd say I'm closer to around 500 now.
Okay.
Late fours, early 500. Yeah. I'd say late 400s.
Yeah. What kind of poundage are you shooting?
70.
70 pounds. Yeah. So we're about the same. I'm just add more, but yeah, virtually the same. I think my arrows.
Last year I was shooting, like I shot the Hoyt RX5 last year, and that was an 80 pound bow. So I had a heavier arrow.
Okay.
But I was shooting a heavier arrow with that Matthews, and it just wasn't getting the response I liked with the lighter arrows downrange. Okay. So
yeah. I think mine is somewhere around it's around 456 or 460, somewhere in there. Grains. Right. I got the 125 heads on, and I didn't have enough time last year to play around with those insert weights and see what was going. Just kind of switched over. Got shooting more than I've ever shot before in the last couple of years. But I am interested in throwing a little more weight in the front end there just for the penetration and stuff. But
yeah,
definitely affects everything else. And you can't use your other arrows again because your trajectory is going to be 100% different.
Yeah. And I think I don't think I'd ever steer away from that 125 grain broadhead.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think I'd ever go to 100 grain. I like that, just that little bit of weight. I mean, the arrows I was shooting last year, they're pretty, they had high FOC. So, but I had a 75 grain, one of those 75 grain brass inserts, and I had the 125 grain broadhead on there. So,
yeah. And that's awesome. Yeah. And there's so much to the arrows nowadays, like carbon weave. And
yeah,
they just put on, as we were talking before there, I got on with Arachnid Archery this year. They've got both. And,
I was looking at their stuff too, for sure. Yeah, they got some neat stuff. I like those thin arrows. I just find if you get a little bit of wind, it doesn't even bother them.
Yeah, I was gonna experiment with some of the micros and stuff, but then on top of that, I couldn't get for my quiver, I couldn't get any rubber inserts to switch over, so my quiver wouldn't even hold any of the arrows,
other than
standard arrow. And I was like, well, I don't really want to spend another $200 on a quiver because I'm going to get a good one.
Yeah, you might.
All about quality. My wife hates it when I upgrade stuff, so I prefer just to buy it once, try once.
Yeah.
And I stuck to their. I think it's 2.46 inside diameter.
Right.
I think if I remember right, I don't know. It's still morning time here.
Yeah, I think I was seeing they had 2.66, and then they had a one. I know those vapes are 1.66, and I think they even had like a 1.24. On that Arachnid page, which is crazy. Yeah,
those would be the Sicarius.
Yeah, those would be neat to try.
Yeah, anybody that I've talked to they're super happy with them. Like they're just bullets, and like you say, they're not. It seems they don't get affected by the big winds as much as
for sure.
Standard arrows.
Do you got a place you can shoot all the time?
Yeah, actually, there's our range, which isn't close, so I'll go there. And then if I'm just doing sometimes at work. Got some sand piles. I'll shoot close range, not long range or anything.
Right.
And I just kind of every day after work, if I can shoot 10 or 15 arrows, just to keep the muscle memory going.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't need a lot. I find, I've gone where I shot 100 arrows a day. I find if you just, you just keep it, you do it every day and you do it religiously, then you don't need to shoot a lot.
Yeah. I was told by one of my buddies, Cody Statham there. He knows his stuff. And he's like, when you're setting up and you're setting your pins and, you're getting going, he's like, don't be doing your 100 arrows a day. He's like, because what you're going to find, especially when you're new and you don't realize the mistakes you're making.
Yeah.
He says, you're going to be making adjustments on stuff that don't need to be adjusted. It's because you're tired.
Yeah. He's that's just it too. Yeah.
And if you're out just practicing, everything's set up 100%, you can shoot as much as you want, but don't change anything. If you got to realize when your arms are getting tired and.
It affects everything, gets affected a little bit too, right? I mean, you shoot your bow, you grab your bow and you pull it back once, it's going to be a react a lot different than the 100th time you pull on it. So
absolutely. But at the same time, it's nice tossing arrows just as long as you don't. My thing is I've definitely shot 100 arrows in a day without a doubt, but I don't touch my pins. I mean, there's no way if it's missing now at this point, it's me. It's not the gear.
Yeah. You're going to know from the first 20 arrows what's really going on, but
yeah. But it is fun.
Cool, man. Well, I think we're going to pull the pin here.
Sounds good.
Thanks for catching up. People don't know, you and I go way back. We used to live up north together. I think I taught you everything about defense, didn't I? Is that how it went?
Well, you definitely taught me everything about keeping your head up when you come across the blue line. Okay, only guy in history to actually lay me out. I never forget it.
good times. Yeah. But hit everybody up again with your Instagram page.
Yeah, it's Kootenay Outdoor Adventures. And I got another link too for that Scree if you're ever looking into it and there's not a sale. Look at scree.ca/Peter. I'll give you 5% off on anything on the site. Go. So throw that up there. And
yeah, I'll throw that in the show notes too. And I got all your stuff and send me the name of the archery shoot over. And
we'll yeah, and I'll give you that link too of our site if anybody forgets it and just wants to get a reminder. But yeah, I know it'd be awesome to have you and your family down, and it'll be an unforgettable weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, buddy. Well, right. We're going to talk soon. I think we'll get you on again here.
Absolutely. All right. Have a great day. Talk to you later. Yeah.
Thank you everyone for tuning in. The Focus Hunting Podcast is coming at you as part of the Waypoint Outdoor Collective. For more information on Waypoint, make sure you head on over to waypointtv.com. Quick shout out to the sponsors of the show, Backroads Maps Books. Never get lost with Backroads Maps. Vortex Optics, the best in optics, period. And Hardcore Archery, BC's interior premier archery shop.
Anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.